This is VK6 Amateur Radio News with News West for Sunday the 15th of August 2021. Today is the History of Amateur Radio edition, and because this weekend is the Remembrance Day contest weekend, we're taking a look at the resumption of amateur radio in Australia after World War II ended. There's also a story out of Tasmania about the RD contest in 1954. In other History of Amateur Radio stories, Will VK6UU brings us the second part of the history of the building of the Caterby repeater site. We bring you news and comment on recent positive developments in the Wireless Institute and a comment on how things developed in amateur radio in Australia after the war. And we finish off with Roy's Amateur Radio Helpline, as usual.
This series of amateur radio history items are from the period immediately after World War II, when amateurs were looking forward to the resumption of their hobby. This is from the Perth Daily News, Thursday 6th of September 1945, and the heading says, Amateur Radio Ban Remains. Ban still exists on amateur wireless transmitting. This was stated by Superintendent E.L. Gregg of GPO Wireless Branch today. No information has been received regarding when the ban is likely to be lifted. Impounded equipment will be retained by the department while the ban continues. Mr. Gregg said that frequencies used by amateurs will be subject to international agreement. The amateur movement in WA was equal to any in the world. Australian amateurs were among the pioneers in shortwave transmission. He corrected a false impression gained by many amateur operators that if their application for licenses were not in before a certain date, they would be refused. There was no foundation in this story. The PMG Wireless Branch is still holding examinations for amateur transmitting certificates, without which an applicant cannot obtain a license. Secretary C. Quinn of the Wireless Institute WA Division hopes that the ban will be lifted shortly. Requests have already been made from headquarters of the Institute in the Eastern States. Suggestions have been forwarded from WA for the grading of amateurs into three groups consisting of A. New experimenter with restricted power, B. User of increased power automatically granted to amateur with a pre-war license, and C. Subject to special examination, a higher power grade with higher technical knowledge. It is expected that due to technical advances in transmitting, nearly every amateur will rebuild his set. A month later, in the Daily News, Saturday the 13th of October 1945, came the heading, Radio Amateurs Again. Amateur radio activity is expected to be permissible within 2 months, according to the telegram received here from the federal headquarters of the Wireless Institute. Amateur radio equipment now in custody is to be released immediately. Transmissions will be resumed as soon as new regulations governing amateur stations are gazetted. In early December, amendments to the wireless telegraphy regulations were gazetted, permitting the operation of experimental radio transmitters by amateurs. Amateur radio activities were banned at the outbreak of war as a security measure. Then, in the Kalgoorlie Minor, Monday 31st of December 1945, came the good news. Amateur radios, wartime ban lifted. Canberra, December the 29th. Licenses have been issued in the last few days to amateur radio operators. The ban on these operators was lifted by regulation in the Commonwealth Gazette several weeks ago. Again, it was imposed during the war for security reasons.
By the time you hear this broadcast, the Remembrance Day contest will be over, or almost over. However it pans out for you, we hope you've had a good weekend. What we'd really like to hear from you mob out there is how you went in the RD contest. What was your setup? Did you set up anything special with antennas? Were conditions good or just downright lousy? Some bands better than others, maybe. Did you think you did okay or poorly or somewhere in the middle? Here at News West, we'd like to hear how you went, and we'll compile your responses in a news story for the contesting edition of News West. You could also consider taking some good photos and sending an article to the AR magazine. Meanwhile, if you haven't packed up yet, enjoy the rest of the contest. And if you're running portable somewhere, we hope your pack up and drive home are safe. Send your story to newswest@vk6.net.
The construction of the Caterby repeater site, 1984. With the access road available, the 60-foot, 19-metre tower was installed all in one day. Guy points were drilled into the rock and the masts assembled on the ground. Trevor VK6MS had made up an A-frame, about 5 metres high. The cable to the winch up the mast went from the winch to the A-frame and then to the mast. This gave the winch a mechanical advantage when the winching first started. I cannot remember if the complete 60-foot was winched up all in one go, or just the first three 15-foot sections, and then the last section added. All went well, and in little time we had a 60-foot guide tower standing on the hill at Yandan. Unfortunately, I have no photographs, apart from once the tower was installed. It was all film technology back then, and photographs were taken with cost in mind. On the same day, we also installed a 75-foot mast at the farmer's house for their TV antenna. The antenna was on a 30-foot windmill tower, and it was hoped that an increase in height would improve the TV picture from Perth. I don't know if over time it made any difference. Yandan Hill was due south of the farmhouse and in the way of receiving TV from Perth. Dinner that night at the farmhouse, then back to Perth. The big weekend was over the New Year summer of 1984. Several amateurs and families stayed in the shearers' quarters. Over that time, the site was to be finished. A garden shed had been purchased, along with many bags of concrete, and towed up to Yandan. Sand came from down the hill and transported in a trailer to the hill. Not sure where we obtained the blue metal. Perhaps Bert, the site owner, had some for us. He did provide a 44-gallon drum of water, which he delivered to the hill before we arrived. He also gave us access to a cement mixer, which we picked up from one of his sheds on the property. It was a hot, windy day on top of Yandan, and the garden shed was assembled on the gravel ground next to the mast. The method for fixing the shed to the ground was a number of spikes driven in as far as they would go, and then the cement floor keyed into the bottom of the garden shed. These sheds have a lip all the way around the bottom, which allowed the concrete to key into the shed. It obviously worked, as the shed has remained on site for all this time despite the strong winds being a feature on Yandan Hill. Also installed was a workbench inside the shed for the repeater to sit on, along with a 12-volt distribution panel on the wall above the workbench. It contained multiple 12-volt outlets, a charging amp meter, and a simple solar regulator. The solar regulator was as simple as it could be, a large 14 volts inner diode on a large heatsink. When the 3-amp solar panel had charged the batteries to 14 volts, the Zener diode dissipated the excess. As said, it was a hot, windy day, and at the end of mixing all the concrete, one of the workers cooled off in the remaining water inside the 44-gallon drum. When it came time to return the cement mixer back to Bert's shed, we put it in my trailer and on arrival at the farm shed discussed how to get it off the trailer. There was only three of us and the mixer was heavy and awkward. Bert passed by while we were discussing this and reached into the trailer and lifted it off and put it in his shed. He was a tall, strong man to say the least. I don't remember if the repeater was also installed over this visit. My guess it was not and was done so at a later visit. The next episode of Building Caterby will describe the technical part of the repeater, what the repeater was equipment-wise, and the antenna and the duplexer, along with the many changes and experiments that were done from the site. The audio to follow was recorded while the cement mixer was making the first load of cement on the floor. 73 from Will, VK6UU.
On HF, VHF and UHF, via the VK6 linked repeater network, and online, this is News West from VK6 ARN.
From the Advocate in Burnie, Tasmania, Monday the 16th of August 1954, is a report on the Remembrance Day contest. Launceston. The annual Remembrance Day contest, which perpetuates the memory of radio amateurs who died in World War II, was held during the weekend. More than 2,000 amateurs from all states took part. The object was to make as many contacts as possible with amateurs in other states. There are 60 amateurs in Tasmania, five of whom are in Launceston. Mr. J. Kimsey said last night that Tasmania was likely to lose to WA or Queensland. We'd won the last three contests. The winner will receive a trophy inscribed with the names of those amateurs who lost their lives.
Perth Tech's beginning to look good. We're being mucked about a bit with COVID over there on the other side of Australia because travel arrangements are a bit dicey with these lockdowns. It's difficult for our guest presenters to commit to travel. Some have committed, pending COVID status at the time. We're sorting out a plan Zulu. Zulu because we've exhausted the alphabet with changes of plans, and if this lot falls through, we'll have to start on plans A1, B1, etc. Now, we've got some local presenters lined up so we can run a live show, unless, of course, VK6 becomes COVIDated. But we're keeping a positive outlook and planning for the best. We're looking down the barrel of running a hybrid event with some live presenters and some via Zoom or similar. We will, however, keep our options open until the last minute. Meanwhile, and this has become important, we need to ask for some help. We need someone with the video equipment and the knowledge and experience to conduct the sessions with a presenter at one end and us in the live audience at the other, and the ability to have a Q&A after each session. If you're the right person and have experience and equipment to make this happen, give us a shout. We'll provide a good internet connection. So is this a job for you? The pay's lousy, but the gratitude's great. Contact us in the first instance by email to perthtech@vk6.net. That's perthtech@vk6.net. perthtech@vk6.net. Now, with the rest of Perth Tech, the registrations are now open online, and although it's a free event, we're charging $20 a head to cover the cost of catering, lunch and morning and afternoon teas. Perth Tech's more than just a day of presentations. There's a sundowner afterwards with food provided. And of course, there's a $15 charge for those attending the Sundowner, and the bar will be open for you to purchase drinks. A new feature of Perth Tech this year is the option to bring your caravan or camper and stay on site on Friday and Saturday nights. There's a charge per night of $12 per van or camper, and this is a pass-on fee that goes to the facility managers. Bookings have begun to trickle in, so don't forget to reserve your spot at Perth Tech 2021. All options for Perth Tech can be purchased in one transaction online, and you can pay with credit or debit cards or with PayPal using a secure payment gateway. And then there's the raffle, the financial powerhouse behind Perth Tech. It's the raffle proceeds that carry the cost of bringing Perth Tech to you. Raffle sales are open now and will remain open until the 23rd of October, which is Perth Tech Day. The raffle and Perth Tech bookings are now on separate online providers. The easiest way for you to get to those sites is to go to vk6.net, and the links are right there on the Perth Tech page.
We jump forward to the Torres News, Thursday Island, Queensland, Tuesday the 24th of September, 1957. Amateur radio, calling CQ. This is the general call of any amateur desiring contact with any other amateur, whether it be in Australia or any other part of the world. Amateur radio dates back to 1912, although not in any prominence until the 20s. In these days, they were called experimenters, and it is through the research work they carried out that radio is as far advanced as it is today. There are thousands of hams, as they are called, operating in the world today, although they have been pushed about first from one set of frequencies to another, making them exploit the higher frequencies, which it has been proved by their experiments that communications can be carried out on frequencies above 4,000 megacycles, which is a wavelength of approximately 3 inches. And when one considers that your broadcast stations work on a wavelength of 300 meters, it shows what the amateur's work has produced. It has often been said, what is the purpose? This is too big a question to answer in a few words, but one of its main purposes is to foster a friendship the world over. This is an established fact, as your own local ham can show by the exchange of cards from nearly every country in the world. Last year, during Cyclone Agnes, when all lines of communication were down, the local hams in Townsville came into force and carried on and kept communications open when all other means failed. That alone is another good purpose. At present, to prepare for any emergencies in this atomic age, the hams, in conjunction with other amateur radio services, have established a Commonwealth Defence Emergency Network. This network of radio is such a high standard that it can be brought into operation within a few minutes, in case of flood, fires, and other natural disasters. The central station of this network in the area is your local ham, Arthur Burton, VK4FE, although Tom Weeks, VK4ML, and Ian Mullins, VK4IM, are available if required. An organisation like the CDEN has long been established in England and America, and have been brought into action on several occasions. Being amateurs, no remuneration is given for their services. The cost of the equipment is high, but once established, it is quite in keeping with the pocket of anyone. The hams hold various contests throughout the year, some within Australia and others are worldwide. Field days are the general run, that is, when the ham takes out his portable emergency equipment and engages in communication with hams wherever they are. At a recent field day held at Palm Beach on the South Queensland coast, a statement was made, and I quote the ABC News, that the ham is ready to meet any emergency, including atomic and hydrogen bomb attack, unquote. This again answers the question, to what purpose? Your own local ham, using the phone ticks of 4 Fox Easy, can be heard, working stations throughout the world on 14 megacycles, or in the 20 metre band. It is of great interest to know that the Australian amateur has the lowest transmitter power, but is considered the most efficient operator. Amateur radio is a good educational hobby, and quite a lot of happy hours can be spent. As the hams would say, 73, and kindest regards.
Congratulations to the Wireless Institute of Australia's board for appointing a new editor of the Amateur Radio magazine after the inappropriate and uncalled-for blunders in Edition 4 this year. The offensive editorial made it necessary and appropriate for the WIA president to publish a public apology, which he did promptly and accurately. Well done, Scott. There was a deliberate omission of the advertisement for Perth Tech, and again, there was an apology had to be brought from the WIA president, and a promise of respectful treatment in the future. So again, Scott, thank you. And lastly, the publishing of a very long, whinging, whining letter with no contributor name protesting about the RPL process through the Australian Maritime College. Now, I don't know who this bloke was, and frankly, I don't care. I endured a read of the tortuously long epistle to try and work out what had happened. It seems to me that this person may have not passed the Australian assessments, so opted for the RPL process, expecting it to be easier, using one of those USA licenses as his evidence, and balked because his assessor wanted to ask a few questions. Anyone who's ever been near a training or educational institution would know that RPL is not a rubber stamp, neither should it be. RPL stands for Recognition of Prior Learning, and it's incumbent on the assessor to satisfy themselves that the learning has indeed occurred and that a sufficient amount of it has been retained. And lastly, let's look at what's good for the hobby of amateur radio. We must always ask ourselves if what we do in the public arena, what it is that we do that moulds public opinion of us collectively and shapes our reputation, is for the good of the hobby. Someone holding a position of influence, such as the editor of an organisation's magazine, must be mindful of the image of the hobby, and especially how we are perceived by those who serve and support us. Again, congratulations to the President and Board of the Wireless Institute of Australia for their decisive action in this regard.
This is VK6ARN, and you're listening to News West.
From Amateur Radio Magazine, August 1947, the editorial. A recent announcement by the Postmaster General, Senator Cameron, has indicated to amateurs that their services during the war were appreciated and recognised in official quarters. At the same time, it was announced that the regulations governing radio amateurs were under revision and would permit many amateur stations to increase their power to use frequency modulation and pulse transmission. The Postmaster General thus made public some of the important changes to existing regulations which had been under discussion between the Radio Inspectors Department and the Wireless Institute of Australia during the past 12 months. It is a fact that the cordial relations existing between the Radio Inspectors Department and amateurs generally has been developed as a result of a keen desire to improve and widen the knowledge of the radio art by both parties. It is also a fact that officers of the Radio Inspectors Department have shown a deep personal interest in the administration of the regulations governing amateurs in ways best calculated to encourage the development of technical knowledge and experimentation, thus enhancing the national value of a section of the community whose knowledge has and can be extremely valuable in these days of scientific warfare and electronic development. Naturally, in the post-war period of changing conditions, international telecommunication conferences, new methods of communications, etc., it's not difficult to understand why new regulations must be carefully considered before promulgation. It is the more difficult, therefore, to understand why various individual amateurs have made approaches to parliamentarians to seek their aid in obtaining permission to use additional methods of communication and increase power, when such facilities were in the process of being granted by the Postmaster General's Department. Both approaches, however well-intentioned, do nothing to strengthen and maintain the satisfactory relations which have always existed between the authorities concerned with the administration of amateur affairs and the amateurs' representatives.
Before I get into this yarn, let me remind you that a camel is a horse designed by a committee. Now hold that thought. Earlier in the program today, you heard about the planned resumption of amateur radio activity in Australia after World War II. That article and a couple of others we included in today's News West concerning the post-war resumption of amateur radio in Australia were quite interesting. But did you catch the bit at the bottom of one item, the one concerning the recommendation about licensing levels? The suggestion came from the WA division of the Wireless Institute of Australia. It might have passed you by, so let's go over that bit, because it's as remarkable in its originality of thought as is the mess that followed in ensuing years. So here's that bit again. Secretary C. Quinn of the Wireless Institute of Australia WA Division hopes that the ban will be lifted shortly. Requests have already been made from headquarters of the Institute in the eastern states. Suggestions have been forwarded from Western Australia for the grading of amateurs into three groups consisting of A. New experimenter with restricted power, B. User of increased power automatically granted to an amateur with a pre-war license, and C. Subject to special examination, a higher power grade with higher technical knowledge. So do you see what I mean? That's as close as darn it to what we have in place now. But goodness me, what a tortuous path it took us to get here between 1945 and 2005, when the present three-tier licensing system was devised. To save you counting on your fingers, that's 60 years. Somewhere between 1945 and 2005, we designed, clearly by committee, a convoluted system of license levels that said you can do this, but not that, unless of course you did the other thing, but in the right order, something like that. The revised three-tier license levels introduced in 2005 simplified our amateur licensing structure, which in the early post-war years could have been a fine figure of a horse. However, what we had was a camel. What we have now is a fine horse, albeit one in need of care and attention, but not in need of redesign by a committee. Like Banjo Patterson's stranger who wandered into Walgett Town, we've been there before, and we must learn from that. I'm Bob VK6POP.
From the Daily News, Monday, 29th of March, 1948. New radio. New frequencies for use by amateur radio stations have been announced by the Deputy Director of Posts and Telegraphs, Mr. J.G. Kilpatrick. As from May the 1st, Australian amateur radio stations will be allowed to transmit on frequencies between 144 and 148 megacycles. They will not be permitted on frequencies between 166 and 170 megacycles. This alteration was made as a result of regulations made at the Atlantic City Telecommunications Conference in 1947 and following representations by amateur radio organisations, Mr. Kilpatrick said. And, from the Daily News, Wednesday the 28th of January 1948, many amateur radio operators in WA tonight will be scouring the 40-metre band for signals from the Australian Antarctic Expedition at Heard Island. The first message from the island, breaking almost a month's silence, was picked up by an RAAF operator last week. Amateur operators today said that to date they'd been searching on the wrong wavelength.
This is VK6 Amateur Radio News, VK6 ARN.
Here's an item that arrived rather late, but anyway, here it is. It's good news for people who can't get to do their Amateur Radio Foundation course at a face-to-face program. It's an Amateur Radio Foundation licensed training program, and it's all done online. And this is offered by Fred, VK3 Delta Alpha Charlie. And Fred says, I'm offering an online Amateur Radio Foundation licensed training program. The online program using Zoom is available to anyone who expresses interest, and there's no cost associated with this program. Now, it's a bit late notice. This program will commence on Thursday the 19th of August, and that's at 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Standard Time, so that's 5 p.m. for us. And it'll run until Friday the 2nd of September. The three evening sessions will commence at 7 p.m, 5 p.m. for us, and run for 3 hours each. You can make your expression of interest by email to trainsafe, you know, as in choo-choo train, trainsafe, one word, at silvertrain.com.au. So that's trainsafe at silvertrain.com.au. And if you didn't write that down quickly enough, have a look at the WA Hams email list, and that will be on the WA Hams list sometime over the weekend. So again, Amateur Radio Foundation Licence Training Program online, ideal for those people who can't get to the face-to-face courses.
A good way to encourage someone's entry into a hobby is to acknowledge their achievements. Next weekend, News West does just that when we take a look at new amateurs. We'll congratulate those who have newly earned call signs, be it first-timers or upgrades and call sign changes. And on top of that, we'll present items to inform new hams and perhaps give you something to think about and ideas of what you could get up to. What was your experience as a new ham? How about telling your story of your entry into the hobby? We'd love to hear from you. If you're unsure how to go about it, shout out on NewsWest at vk6.net.
Good morning, this is Roy VK6 X-Ray Victor with this week's non-helpline segment. There's no items for you this week because the RD contest, possibly. It's the RD contest weekend, the 76th anniversary of the cessation of World War II hostilities in the Pacific. Hooray for that. Today we have no items for you, but if you'd like to include the items for next week, I'm still here, I haven't gone away. The email address for any items for next week's broadcast, victorkilo6xrayvictor@bigpond.com is the only address you need. VK6xrayvictor@bigpond.com. And enjoy your RD contest. I hope you have a good number of contacts today, and get your numbers in, help WA along the road. Cheers for now. 7-3 from Roy, VK6xrayvictor.
Thanks for tuning in. If you're listening on Sunday morning and you're doing the RD contest, good luck with what's left of it, if you're still going. We're giving our attention to new amateurs next week, and hopefully we'll have a wrap for the RD contest. Thanks to the broadcast team and to the studio team, Roy, Jeff and Andrew, who's stepping in for Mike. Mike took a day off without pay. I'm Bob VK6, POP, the News West producer, and my job's still on the market, all offers considered. If you've been shouting yourself hoarse all weekend in the RD contest, you're excused, but the rest of you, after giving a shout in the callbacks, go get on air and make some noise.